so it's as far away as possible from anybody else.
Okay. Okay, so we have looked at madness and foolishness as kind of opposites to wisdom and sanity. Just a couple of things about madness. We'll look at the context quickly. The popular belief about madness at the time was that madness was something that was caused by an imbalance in the person. There was a belief in what were called the humours, humours. And it was believed that in the human body we were made up of four kind of main humours: blood, wind, or air. They probably call it fire and water. And the is it blood, fire, air, and water? Okay, so the belief was that in a person these humours needed to be balanced, and that if the humours were unbalanced, then it could cause madness. Okay, so balance of humours. It was. So it's water, air, fire, and blood were the four humours. This is in an age of fairly primitive understanding of the human body. We knew a fair bit about how the human body worked, but we didn't really understand the kind of basics behind it. And so those were the four humours. They were a medieval concept, but they were still very much in existence in the Renaissance time. Renaissance time was, as I said, a time of great advancement, and there were huge advances in our understanding of the human body throughout the Renaissance period. Da Vinci is kind of credited for lots and lots of discovery, and it was Da Vinci who undertook these incredibly detailed drawings of the human body and how it worked. So this is, as with everything we're looking at, so kind of clash here between old medieval thinking and more modern Renaissance understanding of biology and how it worked. Madness, though, was a thing of real fascination for Renaissance thinkers and Renaissance people.
What was
madness? Because it was something that they feared. Because there was no clear explanation for it. They had the theories, the imbalance of the humours. But there was no clear reason for madness. Why some people were born as they would have seen it mad. Why some people became mad. Of course, today we have all kinds of psychological and biological reasons for that. We understand psychology much more. We understand mental illness much more. And the link between physical illness and mental illness, we understand that, but they didn't. And so madness was a thing, both a fascination and a fear. We talked a little bit about Bedlam when we looked at Poor Tom, but Bedlam is a really good example of Renaissance culture's fascination with madness. It was an open hospital, a hospital in inverted commas, Bedlam, where people were sent who were seen as mad. But it was sport to go and watch them on the weekend, and their rooms were open and you would have gone and watched. Partly out of fascination, partly out of fear, partly out of sport. It was a particularly grotesque side of Elizabethan life. And so in his play, King Lear, Shakespeare takes that theme of madness and explores it and plays with it. And you get this sense of this playwright taking this idea and just looking at it from different angles. Because you have lots of different types of madness in King Lear, don't you? And we talked about this a bit earlier, so I won't talk about it much, but you've got the fool, who is a kind of professional madman, if you like. Depending on how a director wants to play the fool, is deliberately foolish or playing the part, it almost doesn't matter. He's kind of a professional fool. Then you've got King Lear, who starts the play sane and who falls into the kind of depths of madness. Now that really plugs into the fear of Renaissance people. How is it that someone who could appear so in control and in authority be somebody who falls to madness? Lear says, and we'll look at it when we look at the script in a couple of lessons time, that bit, but he says, let me not fall to madness. Almost as if madness is like a disease, like you fall ill, you fall victim to something. Like madness is something that happens to you, something that you can catch, something that happens to you that you've got no real control over. And then you've got poor Tom, who pretends madness. So you've got the professional madman, the real madman, if you like, and then the pretend madman.
Did you say something
about
the
fool? Yeah, the fool's kind of the professional madman. So the question the play asks is, what is madness? What does it look like? It doesn't explore the great question of what causes madness. Although, in the shape of King Lear, the character, Shakespeare seems to be working his way towards an understanding, quite a modern understanding, of madness and identity being very much caught up in each other. When we read it, we read that from a very psychological point of view. We say, well, he's lost his sense of identity, in the kind of way that Miller might look at some of his characters, think of Broken Glass, lost the sense of identity, and that leads to his madness. A Renaissance audience wouldn't have understood that in quite the same way. Shakespeare wouldn't have understood that in quite the same way. What they would have seen is that here's a man who stepped out of his position in the great chain of being and therefore puts his humours out of balance, and the physical reaction to that is his madness. So their understanding would have been quite as psychological as ours is. But still, it's quite a modern concept that he's playing with there. And we've said this before, so I'll just touch on it briefly, what is particularly noteworthy, though, about King Lear is that he refuses at every point to simply categorise madness in one dimension. Because for every character who touches madness, whether it's deliberately, whether it's professionally, whether it's kind of tragically, it's in their madness that they actually often find the most truth and the most insight. And just very quickly, we've looked at this, I won't do it for a long time, but if you look at Lear, he finds those great moments of sanity, of insight on the heap when he's at his most mad. When his questions revolve around, well, what is man and what is our relationship with God and what's our relationship with each other and the poor, and those are great insights. It seems to me they're insights that are very deliberately aimed at the king as he sat, James as he sat watching this, but more than that. And then you deal with a fool who throughout the first half of the play is the character who speaks the most insight. Lear's shadows. Who am I, says Lear. Lear's shadow, says the fool. And then who's the character who's probably, of all the characters, the one the most generous, the most giving, the most self-sacrificing? I'd say Edgar, who nurses his blind father across the heath, who pretends and who risks his own life to take on his brother Edmund. And it's in his pretend madness that he does all those things. If you were to deal with madness in an essay, the theme of madness came up, the obvious thing to do is to juxtapose it with wisdom, and we've done that already. So if the question of that madness came up, you'd want to deal with it in juxtaposition to wisdom, because that's what Shakespeare does in his play. And that, go on. No, I would deal with madness. I would look at madness in the play. So I'd look at the characters who are mad, and I would do that bit around with three ideas of pretend madness, professional madness, and kind of tragic madness. And then I would look at wisdom in the second half of my essay, and look at the relationship between wisdom and madness. Because you'd want to look at some of the characters who we might claim are wise. So those characters who make the best of the circumstances, Edmund, Goneril, Regan. And then look at this idea of wisdom being found in the middle, actually, of madness as an ending. And then you've looked at it from different angles and explored it. The 3-point plan is still the way to go about this. As you can see, the 3-point plan stays with us all the way through, really. Right. So that's. Are there any more questions about madness? Okay. Good. Let me stop that then.